brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
The ability to accept responsibility when we make mistakes as a coach is super important for building that relationship with parents and players.
Jeremy Schiller is a boys basketball varsity head coach at IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. Jeremy has more than 20 years of experience in both college and high school basketball. During his career, he has won over 400 games and several Coach of the Year awards, including the 2019 National Federation of High Schools Florida Coach of the Year. He's also coached numerous players who have gone on to play in college and professionally. Before IMG, Schiller served as the head coach at Lakewood Ranch High School in Bradenton, Florida. During his tenure, Lakewood Ranch won 4 district titles, played in 3 regional finals, made it to 2 Final Fours, and was the state championship runner-up in Class 8A. Prior to Lakewood Ranch, Schiller was an assistant coach at Eckerd College and a graduate assistant at the University of South Florida. Schiller serves on the FHSAA Advisory Board and the Executive Board of the Florida Association of Basketball Coaches. Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Jerry Buckley from Bishop Kenny High School in Jacksonville, Florida, and you are listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast and Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered. Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. FastModel also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. FastModel Sports is the best in basketball. Grab your notebook before you listen to this episode with Jeremy Schiller, boys basketball varsity head coach at IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, but I am pleased to be joined by the head varsity coach at IMG Academy, Jeremy Schiller. Jeremy, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
And Mike, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's a huge honor. You've had some really, really big time guests, and you know, hopefully, you know, I can add a little value too.
We are excited to be able to have you on and talk to you about what you've been able to accomplish thus far in your coaching career. I want to start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about some of your first experiences with the game of basketball.
So my story is a little bit unique in the sense that I started basketball pretty late. So I was in seventh grade. We had moved to Brandon, Florida. And I was at a very small private school, and I played soccer, and I was actually pretty good at that. I led the team in assists in soccer, and then basketball season came around, and the school was small enough that the coach was the same coach. So, you know, although I was limited in skill, he kept me around because I worked really hard and I was a good kid. And I scored 2 points my first season in seventh grade. That was an exciting time. Pretty good memory. And I basically just got ate up and fell in love with basketball. So started practicing on my own 4 or 5 hours a day outside my friend's house, to the point where sometimes at night his parents or him or he would come out and, you know, kick me out and make me go back to my house. And during falling in love with it, you know, I had the opportunity eventually to make varsity at a really good high school, Brandon High School in Tampa, Florida. A lot of really good players have come through there before me, like Jeff Turner and Dwayne Shintzes. And actually, while I was there, I had the opportunity to play with two guys that ended up playing in the NBA, Joey and Stephen Graham. So really unique high school playing experience. During that time, I tore up my shoulder and kind of led into a very short-lived freshman team experience at Eckerd College, and actually moved into coaching when I was 19 years old, my sophomore year of college.
So as a high school player, when you think back to that time, do you have a favorite memory that sticks out from your playing career in high school?
You know, I didn't have a major role on the court. I think the parts that stick out to me the most were when I was younger, there was this Adidas commercial where, like, they showed the kid on the sidelines cheering and jumping up and down and being engaged and kind of going up and down with every moment. And that was always kind of the big joke with my friends, is that's how I was. And a lot of the leadership things that I went through in high school, you know, bled pretty naturally into becoming, you know, a coach. And I did start out coaching at my old high school. But my memories are more like we were at a really big tournament in Ocala, Florida, Kingdom of the Sun. And we were struggling, and we had a big team meeting, and, you know, everybody was kind of not saying much. And I really dove into kind of leading that moment. And you know, I remember my teammates, who are all significantly more talented than me. I mean, not only do we have two NBA players, but we had, I think, 5 or 6 Division I players. We had 13 guys that played college on our team. And like one of our guys that barely played ended up playing on a Final Four junior college team. So just a ton of talent. But my ability at that time to kind of connect everybody and help them galvanize, even though I wasn't out on the court, was kind of the main memory. And then I remember my first 2 points in high school very clearly, because it was a fast break layup. Because all I hoped was I hope I score, you know, while I'm a varsity basketball player. And in my first game, like second possession, I score a transition layup. So the pressure was off for me at that point.
So when you think about stepping up there in the locker room in a time of crisis, was that something that you felt comfortable with, something that maybe in your background, there was some piece of kind of who you were or how you were brought up that made you rise to that moment? Or just when you think back to that, because obviously that's something that not every high school player, not every high school kid is capable of. So when you think back to that moment, where do you think that came from?
So I think, like most things, we're kind of like products of all the different moments in our life. And for me, some of the things that I've gone through pretty significant prior to then was I was voted as like student government president for our entire school. I had gone to a leadership camp run by Rotary called S4TL. And I think those experiences outside of basketball helped shape my in basketball experience. So for me, it was really natural because I was extremely passionate about what we were doing, even though like most kids who were sitting on the bench kind of are disengaged. I was anything but that. I don't know that I ever thought it would turn into coaching. I just knew that, you know, like whatever it took to help my teammates and this, you know, group of people I cared about do better. So that was the thing I could do. So it really happened naturally, just from my kind of my educational development experiences, if that makes sense, more than, you know, sports necessarily.
No, it does. It makes a ton of sense. And I think it's interesting when you look at sort of the way we talk about as coaches now, right? Helping our players to develop as people. And I think it's something that coaches are probably more intentional about that today than they've ever been. And certainly there's lots of opportunities for players to develop outside of the game, whether that's through their schoolwork or through internships or just all the things that kids are doing today. So it doesn't necessarily, as you said, have to come through sports, but as you and I both know, sports is such a great microcosm of what kids are going to eventually face out there in the world, whether it's in their job or with their family relationships and all those things. And so it's always interesting to kind of hear where that leadership characteristic, where it comes from in different people. You talked a little bit about the injury in college and how that sort of pushed you towards getting into coaching. And you said a couple of times that, you know, you never necessarily thought about it from a coaching standpoint, but then was there a point where you started to recognize that, hey, maybe coaching is a direction that I want to head? Was there one sort of seminal moment that hit you, or was it sort of a gradual process?
So I'd say it was more of a gradual process. You know, once I stopped playing, I knew that I was still passionate about basketball and I still played every day, you know, kind of outside when I was healthy enough to do that, because I actually tore my labrum. So there'd be times where I could get through kind of the discomfort, but to do it at a college basketball level just really wasn't possible. But my high school head coach, who I ended up working for, Mark Herman, you know, I think saw it in me before I did. So really unique situation. So he would host a spring league every year with all the other high schools in the area would play. And every year we would always have our quote unquote Brandon All-Star team. And it was seniors and kind of alumni that were still in the area. So like older guys would come in and play, or just the seniors that had graduate or were about to graduate. And I was in charge of coaching the team. I played as well. And it's funny because that was kind of the first time I was Coach Schiller. And somehow, some way, probably need to clean out my closet more, but I found that envelope that had the title of Coach Schiller, which would have been from like 1998. And I found that in when I was coaching at my last high school, and I was able to send a photo over to my head coach, Mark Herman, because that was kind of the first time I had been Coach Schiller. Spent my freshman year trying to see if I could play at the collegiate level. And I just was a combination of not good enough and hurt. And I went back and met with my high school coach and just asked if I could help out in a volunteer level. And you know, then I guess we're 23 years later. It's been a pretty big part of my life.
So that first experience where you go back to your high school and you're working for your high school coach, obviously now that relationship shifts from player to coach to coach to coach. When you think about that time, is there something that stands out to you that maybe was surprising or different than what you thought when it came to that first experience coaching?
So I think the biggest thing is I genuinely didn't know what to do. So like as a player, I knew if I did X, Y, and Z or whatever, coach would address it, or he would have a plan of what we were doing that day. But being on the other side of it, it's like, I remember very distinctly thinking I knew where we had to get to, but I didn't really have the tools to get there on my own. Like I didn't know. So I had to do a lot of like thinking, and things that actually shaped how I coached, still do, were just kind of problem solving in a unique environment where we had very, very talented JV players. And my high school coach gave us support, like in the sense of I never dealt with parent issues. I never ordered a t-shirt. I had to do laundry, but I never had to deal with that stuff. But he really basically gave me the freedom to develop the kids and, you know, coach them without a ton of structure. So that allowed me to kind of develop my own path on how I wanted to teach things. My brain's kind of always worked in a way where, like, if I see where there's an issue, I'm going to attempt to be creative and trying to figure out how to solve those problems. So when I would see that kids didn't know how to rebound, I would think about how to make up a rebounding drill. I mean, I wasn't in the generation where you could put on YouTube and find 100 rebounding drills. I had to think about it, talk with my assistant coaches. They would, you know, use their background, talk with other coaches. But it was a really unique time, because what really fostered it was just the opportunity to kind of experiment, and having unbelievably talented kids makes it a lot easier. I mean, we had a JV team where I coached multiple kids that went on to play Division I basketball. It's pretty rare that those types of kids play JV. So we were really athletic, and they covered up for a lot of my mistakes as a coach. So a really unique opportunity for sure, starting out in that type of environment.
When you're putting together drills, I'm just curious, even now today, because I'll answer this I'll answer my own question in a second, but I'm just curious to get your perspective. When you're putting together a drill, and obviously, again, today you can just go and find video and whatever, but we all are sometimes creative and we're trying to think of things that can help our team. Do you think better in terms of coming up with a drill that meets the needs of your team when you're on the floor and you're kind of thinking it up either on the fly or you're actually out there kind of walking it through in your mind? Or are you better sitting down at your kitchen table with a pen and pad and working it out that way?
So I am, I always try to be ultra prepared. So for me, any ideas I have, I would write down. Then I would go through, walk through it in my head and think about all the things, like the ultimate goal, and to make sure that when I'm developing the drill that I keep the main thing the main thing, you know, so I don't want it to be too complex where we lose sight of what we're actually focused on. And then the question in my head is always the amount of time it takes me to teach them how to do this effectively.
Right.
That worth the amount of positive we're going to get from it. So, when I was younger, I didn't know that. I just knew after the fact, well, that took too long and that didn't get us where we needed to go. Now with the years of experience, we're going to try to do something new. That's kind of the filter I take it through. And I think that's where, for me, where most coaches get lost is they spend all this time choreographing something that happens two times in a game. And to me, the cost benefit of doing that isn't high enough to do it that way. So, you know, I would say I go through it. And then now I'm in a unique environment where there's 40 other coaches with multiple years of experience. So often if I want to try something new, I walk down an office and talk to any one of the former Division I head or assistant coaches and see, you know, what they think. I'm in a really unique environment at IMG now.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that. I know we're jumping ahead and we'll circle back to this, but I'm just curious with the coaching staff there and just how you guys have it organized in terms of the teams. And obviously you have, for people who aren't familiar, there's different levels that you guys have. You have a national team and then you have teams that are obviously at levels below that. But do you guys as a basketball staff get together and meet, or just what does the process look like there at IMG in terms of collaboration between all the coaches of the different teams that you guys have?
So let me go through, because there's a lot to unpack with that. So first is describing kind of the structure. I think that's the easiest way, like how the teams are kind of structured. And then I can dive into kind of how we all communicate and connect. Sure. So the easiest way to look at it is we have 18 teams. That's counting post-grad, varsity girls, and we have junior level teams from JV through middle school. So there's 18 total teams. There's 6 varsity teams. They are not specifically tiered. So you do have the high school national team, which would essentially be 10 of the top 50 players in the country at each of their positions in the high school varsity program. That's the national. Then I coach what's called IMG Blue. We are very specifically designed to be competitive, but we're kind of that next tier where we have three high major kids with recruitment, probably 7 or 8 other Division I players. So still an exceptionally high, what most programs would probably call like their regional team. And then the rest of the varsity teams are kind of balanced and set up to make sure that every kid has this really unique experience that we have at IMG, where we have a team that fits what every kid needs for their development, including the IMG Blue team, which I coach, and the national team. We can provide what they need for their development. So if a kid needs a ton of minutes and kind of the freedom to play through mistakes, we have a varsity team that plays the appropriate schedule and plays that. And then we have, you know, like for my team, there might be kids who need that ultra competitive environment to compete for their minutes because they've kind of had those other experiences. And now they just need to be in an environment where they're, you know, playing against the best players, some of the best players in the country every day. So that's what's really unique about IMG, is that we have basically whatever team fits what a kid needs, as opposed to the kids trying to fit into the team. I don't know. I mean, initially when we make the teams, and then we obviously have to create like a team culture, and, you know, we play a singular schedule. We don't move kids between teams or anything. They're on that team. And then we develop our culture from there, based on weeks of essentially call, we'll call it a training camp where we organize the kids based on what we think is best for what they need. So that's kind of the structure of IMG. Then when you talk about collaboration, it is constant. So like obviously within our varsity program, we may collaborate and work together and just talk because we have our similar offices, but like the level of basketball knowledge and connectivity, like I'm literally able to walk down a, you know, a hallway and go speak with our girls national coach, Shell Daly, who's an unbelievable coach. She's coached, I believe, in the WNBA. I'm 99% sure she played there as well. And like, that's somebody I can go talk to about anything. Often when people say, what's it like there collaborating? I just use this story. Last year, I was walking in from lunch, and Dan Bardo, who's been there for about 17 years, and Chad Myers, who was our post-grad national head coach, and is now at New Mexico State as an assistant. I bump into them and Chad and I start talking about peel switching. And then Dan has his ideas and we're on the court for 30 minutes impromptu discussing peel switching. And I felt like might be the only place in the world where that happens, at that level. And that's kind of a normal occurrence. You know, the really unique thing, Brian Nash, who's our director, has done an amazing job just bringing in really quality people that really care about IMG and the players there. So we're all really open to sharing ideas, scrimmaging against each other. It's just a really unique environment. I tell people all the time, if you love basketball, it's the best place in the world. I can't imagine anything can even compare to it.
I would think just with the amount of resources, both the physical resources in terms of the facilities, and then you start talking about the quality of the coaches that you guys have there and the ability, as you said, to collaborate and talk with other people. And clearly, look, I think one of the things, and I'm sure you can attest to this, that as a high school coach, a lot of times, just like if you're a teacher, I think a lot of times in those two positions, there's frequently the feeling that you are kind of on an island and that you're trying to navigate this whole thing by yourself. And sure, as a high school coach, you might have your staff that you can talk to and whatever. But a lot of times you feel like you got, oh man, like I got to deal with this situation and nobody's ever had to deal with this before. And I'm sure for you guys, you just walk, as you said, down the hallway or you step out onto the court and there's a myriad of mentors or people that you can bounce ideas or thoughts off of. And to me, just from all the conversations that I've had on the podcast with other coaches, the ability to have that mentor or that person that you can go to when you're looking at a situation, whether it's an X's and O's or probably more likely something off the floor or culture related, to be able to have somebody that you can go to that's right there, to me seems like it would just be completely invaluable. There's no way you could even quantify that.
No, and like you said, I think it's also unique because like there's younger coaches, there's older coaches, there's guys that have played professionally. Like my assistant, Daniel Santiago, played on the Puerto Rican national team. He's in that Redeem Team Netflix movie, like nice. For 5 years. And that's the guy I hang out with every day. So like getting his experiences from 18 years of playing professionally, and him, he's 7'1". So it helps. We have the tallest teenager in the world is on my team. We have a 7'6", 16-year-old. And so just getting like unique perspectives that like, you can't get anywhere else. And when you're at a traditional high school, even like the last high school I was at, Lakewood Ranch, a lot of really successful coaches, there was probably four or five of us that worked at the same level. And then there was other people that worked at different levels related to just the level of passion and intensity to what we did. And, you know, at IMG, that they're all like that. So like you said, it's not even just the technical ability. It's just the level of investment and how, you know, we're all professional coaches. Where at traditional high school, you know, there's a lot of people that maybe work hard, but they're not really, you know, professional coaches. They do it to get a little extra stipend or to help out the school. This environment is definitely unique and different. And it really provides an amazing experience for the kids, because so far we've also only touched on the basketball. It doesn't count our APD, which is like leadership, mental training, nutrition. We also have strength coaches that are some of the best in the world, yoga instruction. Like it's a really unique environment for players and for coaches.
Tell us a little bit about how you weave those things that you just mentioned. How do those get weaved into a player's day? What does that look like?
So I just walk you through, like, my average varsity player's day is they go to school in the morning. That varies based on what classes they're in and everything else. But essentially in the morning, about 11:20, they're done with school. And that leads into, like, every one of our teachers has to have office hours similar to college. So I want to say those are done by like 12:15, 12:30. So sometime between that, like 11:30-ish, that they're done with class, and 1:30 when we start practice, they'll go and get food. They'll come in and get extra work. If that's, you know, if that's something that they want to do, that we give them like extra skill work with our skills coaches or us. Obviously, they'll see trainers to get ready. And then we start practice. We'll go practice 1:30 to 3:30. That's done, and they'll go to weights. And then sometimes that flips. So we might go 3:30 to 5:30, which means we'd lift first for practice. And then at least once a week, sometimes more, we set up group APD sessions with nutrition, leadership, and mental training. And then if the kids want, they can actually set up separate as well. So like, think like classroom style with, you know, 15 kids. But if a kid says, you know, like, let's say we had a kid that needed to lose weight, he has different questions than a kid that needs to gain weight, they can set up one-on-one appointments with them, you know, basically like around their schedule. And then open gym for about 3 hours in the evening where they have access to gun. We actually have a shooting court, which I think, I'm going to say this wrong, but I think it's got like 9 or 10 baskets on one court. So you can essentially like put, set up the gun or the shoot away or whatever on each of the baskets and just get up shots. It's just like the best basketball environment in the world. And, you know, it really helps prepare kids that are serious about basketball for their next step, if that's going to be college, because, you know, most colleges don't even have the resource that we have. So they're prepared for weights and everything that's going to be thrown at them.
So for you, you've obviously had an opportunity to coach at the, I'm going to just use the term, regular high school. You've had the opportunity to work as a college assistant coach at your alma mater, in addition to being a GA at South Florida. So, and then now you have IMG. So when you think about those different experiences, it would seem that IMG is sort of, I don't want to say in between, maybe isn't the right way to say it, because I'm sure that IMG probably have more resources than many, if not most, college programs. But just talk a little bit about sort of your career path and the differences between a regular high school, college, and IMG. I'm not talking about in terms of resources or things you do, but just your mentality about how you approached it and kind of how you felt about each one of those positions, what you liked, what you wish maybe would have been different about each of those experiences.
Sure. So I'll just walk through from kind of the beginning of my coaching career. So perfect. I started varsity coach at Brandon High in Tampa. Phenomenal early experience. My head coach, Mark Herman, was one of the best like program developers I've been around. Like, he just knew to do things that made sense to me. Now that as a kid, I just saw it happen. And then when I was on his coaching staff, like, we had Jordan brand jerseys when no one else did. So it made kids think, I want to go there because they're sponsored by Jordan, you know, those types of things. It just always had the best year, always made sure we were playing in a ton of games. So that was my first experience. My first 4 years was, I was a junior varsity coach. Really unique environment with a lot of talented players. It was one of my favorite coaching. I've really been fortunate. I've had a lot of really cool coaching jobs. It's one of my favorite ones because you really didn't do anything besides coach. I mean, they're really just like, my head coach just took everything off our plate. He just wanted me to make sure I was, you know, gave the kids, you know, the best experience kind of thing. After I was at Brandon, I was a GA at USF with Robert McCullum. We were really successful. We actually went to the Conference USA semifinals that year. It was a really fun experience to be at Division I, but it also opened my eyes that being a part of the business of basketball at that level may not have been what I wanted to do, especially having gone from coaching and being really engaged in like practice planning and helping develop players. And as a GA at that time, that wasn't really the way the position was structured. So I did that for a year. Then I got my head coaching job at Osceola High School, school with about 2,500 students. And that was a really unique experience because the high school I played at, we were really good. So kids showed up every day. They worked really hard. That's the only thing I really knew. And then I was at college. And when I got to Osceola, I took over a program that had the same coach for 25 years and won 88 games during those 25 years. So really fun to try to like change the entire culture. But there was a lot of challenges with things I'd never thought about, like kids not showing up to practice, kids not working at basketball year round, like all these things that just didn't make sense to me. So it was really good to give me another perspective on what that, you know, that experience is like. And we won 7 games, and that was a really big deal. And everybody was really excited on campus. And then I was fortunate that I was able to become a Division II assistant for Tom Ryan at Eckerd College. That was really, really great as well. Having a chance to work at the college level that I felt like at the time was more about relationships. Not that it wasn't about winning and it wasn't serious and we didn't have very talented players, because we did. We went to multiple NCAA tournaments. But working for Tom Ryan, like, he's probably the best person I've been around as far as building long-lasting and consistent relationships. So it was really helpful to me, kind of learning and watching how he built those relationships with guys beyond just the X's and O's part. And then I spent 1 year back at Brandon High School while I dealt with some family things. I was able to help one of my former players. Became the head coach, which is crazy. Started to feel old at that point. he became the head coach, and I was living in Brandon, and I was able to help him for a year, which was a lot of fun. I felt like I added a lot of value while I was dealing with the family things. I had my family's up north, so I was just trying to fly back and forth, and I just didn't feel comfortable keeping a college job at that time. So did high school, and then I got to Lakewood Ranch High School, which is where I was for a decade. And we went from being the worst team in the county to not losing a game in our county from 2014 to 2021. During our time, we went from – it never had a 20-win season. We ended up with 6 20-win seasons, and we went to – we won 4 district titles, and we went to 2 Final Fours, and we played in 3 regional finals at a school that had not been traditionally good at basketball. So that was really fun building it from the ground up and proving a lot of people wrong on what could be done in a school that was close to choice and had to have kids. We're also in the second largest classification in Florida. So like we went to state championship in 8A. You're talking about schools that are like 22 to 2,500 students. So that was really fun. And we had, not only did we have, community kids, but they also were top 5 academically, winning academic state championship twice for basketball while we were there. So that was a really awesome experience too. And you know, I was fortunate enough to turn it into an opportunity at IMG. And you know, IMG is such a unique place. It's hard to compare it to high school or college. It's kind of in between from what we would call a traditional high school to this high level sports boarding school. It's been a lot of fun, but it has unique challenges. You know, I think the biggest one is I love building culture, and long-term program building is just kind of the most fun part of this for me, along with long-term relationship building, you know, having relationships with the kids that I coached 23 years ago, or the kids I coached last year is just as important. And I've been able to maintain those. But at IMG, the really unique thing is we get our teams announced around the middle of September. And before we play a game, we have to find a way to get our guys completely connected, playing unselfish and playing winning basketball, and finding a way to do that within the construct of the environment we're in, where all the kids kind of come from different places, either in the United States or the world, to better themselves at basketball. So coming from a traditional high school where we're playing for our community and trying to win a state title, and transitioning into a school where trying to help kids be prepared to play in college only, where winning is a byproduct of them making winning plays. The way I describe it is that's what college coaches want to see. So that way college coaches know when they come to us, they get a kid off of IMG Blue, they're built to make winning plays. The actual end score of our games don't matter as much until we're in the prep national championships. But the idea is that we're compiling film and habits for our guys that when college coaches see them and like them, that they check every box related to how hard they play, how committed they are to winning, how unselfish they are, you know, how they guard the basketball. And we've already been fortunate enough to see that that works. We had a player last year, Carson Cooper, came to us with zero Division I offers and left IMG as a full scholarship member of Michigan State, which is his dream school. And he is playing for Michigan State. Looking forward to watching him on TV tomorrow night as a freshman. So
that's awesome. I mean, I think when you start talking about being able to have that kind of impact on a kid, that's really when you think about coaching. Clearly, winning and losing is important to everybody. And a lot of times, ultimately, again, especially the higher level you go, the more you're judged on those wins and losses. But the ability to help a kid to realize their dream and move on and jump up a level, there's nothing better than being able to have that long-term impact on a kid's life. Looking to grow your coaching? United Basketball Plus has over 3,000 plays and 45 deep dive courses with some of the best minds in the game, including Tyler Costin, Paul Kelleher, Tobin Anderson, Dave Love, and more. You can also view their United Basketball clinics and receive 50% off in-person clinics. United Basketball Plus has partnered with Jordan and Joe's Decision for their skill development curriculum. United Basketball Plus is a one-stop shop to help you grow as a coach, leader, and culture builder. Follow the link in the show notes and use the code CLINIC to receive an annual membership for just $50. I want to talk a little bit about the culture piece of it, and let's go backwards to Lakewood Ranch first, and then we'll jump ahead to IMG. But you talked about how the program, when you took over, was really down, and you eventually built it up into a powerhouse. And that's a situation that, especially a lot of young coaches who maybe are getting their first head coaching job, they're oftentimes not taking over the tradition-rich program that is just kind of plug and play, and you come in and you just kind of keep things going. Most guys, when they get their first job, you're talking about an opportunity at a program that has probably been down, and you got to turn it around. So when you think back 10, 11 years ago, when you first get that job and you're thinking about what do we have to do in order to turn this thing around, when you look at the totality of your time there at Lakewood Ranch, what are some of the things that you feel like you did really well or that you instilled in the program that helped you to eventually have the success that you did?
So I think the biggest, like the first thing, like when I've been fortunate to speak on a few situations, a few coaching environments, I actually spoke at a business association actually a couple months ago about kind of culture building. And I think the first pillar is like demonstrating on a daily basis that you live the characteristics you're expecting from those kids. So like if whatever I decide is important. So for us, it was working really hard, being committed, you know, being unselfish, you know, valuing each other in the long-term relationship, making sure kids had a great experience. Well, if I'm not demonstrating that on a daily basis, if I'm cutting quarters or I'm being lazy, there's no way to build the culture. And I think that's where the first step where people go wrong is whatever you're going to decide is the stuff we're going to value. We need to reward those things, and we need to demonstrate those things on a daily basis, because if we're not doing it as a leader, there's no way to get others to do it. You know, and then I think the thing is you have to assess, like, what are your strengths? You know, what are the current strengths of the program? What are the weaknesses? Where are there some areas that there's opportunity? And then what are the things that could really impact us not getting where we're trying to go? So you have to come up with a plan related to the resources you have. So for us at Lakewood Ranch, although we started with negative $500 in our account, our demographic was good. So I knew that if we really worked hard to fundraise, we could potentially do that, which if we have the best year, maybe it creates an environment. At that time, we had choice. Maybe kids want to come to our school. So we started out grassroots doing camps and clinics for free initially. getting in the community and doing fundraising so that way we could make sure our guys had great gear, great jerseys, all that stuff. And that camp part of it became huge. We got to the point where we were selling out at 120 campers a week, 4 weeks over the summer. And that was funding, you know, everything that we did. But I think that really the first part of it is to analyze, like, what were our strengths? Like, our weaknesses for us were that we didn't get traditionally strong basketball players. Well, so I can make that an excuse, or I can figure out how to help develop them younger, how to build relationships with travel ball coaches who are in the area who may want to bring their kids to a place that takes this thing, you know, takes it serious. You know, and then you want to look at, okay, what are the things that are going to impact our ability to do that? I think the only way to really build a strong culture is to make sure you understand and you build relationships with all your stakeholders. You know, often we spend all our energy on the kids, but we've got to get the parents invested. We have to make sure our administration's invested. And usually if they see you doing things consistently, they're gonna be invested in what you're doing, especially if they're, you know, highly successful administrators or parents who really care about their kids. Although they may not agree with every decision you make, you know, over time, they're going to agree with the fact that you're invested in and care about their kids. So, you know, I think those were kind of the main things, you know, that we did while we were at Lake Ranch to build a culture. And, you know, over time, it became a thing that everyone really wanted to be a part of. And the kids that were a part of it didn't all necessarily even want to play in college. They just loved basketball. They loved their teammates. You know, they built lifelong relationships. Like, we have a bunch of guys that are going to be in each other's weddings. And the crazier part is our parents became connected because of the culture we created. And, like, I still think some of the parents, especially our group of 2020 parents, they still hang out. Like, they go, it's been years. They're sophomores and juniors in college, and they're still off, you know, grabbing drinks on Friday nights together and stuff. So, you know, I think never losing sight of the fact that although wins and losses are important and that's what we're working towards, it's really more about making sure that they become successful people and that we live that every day and what we value and what we reward in our program, you know, I think is a big part of what we did at Lakewood Ranch. And then, you know, the culture at IMG, like I said, is just different. Our director, Brian Nash, does a great job of having an ultra positive culture and a connectivity throughout IMG. But once you're on your team, you know, you really have to find ways to connect. In this team, all 11 players on my team at IMG want to play in college. So the way that I connect with them, and it's worked both years, so I think it makes sense, is these are the things that you have to do. And we outline exactly what college coaches are looking for their position related to their size. And I've even been fortunate enough, I have enough relationships with college coaches, I actually get their feedback, not on this specific player, but hey, you know, if you've got a 6 foot tall point guard, what are you looking for them to do? If you've got a 7 foot tall post player, what are you looking for them to do? And what things, you know, cross kids off your list. So, you know, we've been able to connect with our guys, and we have really, really good kids and supportive parents, and they understand that they have to play hard and take charges and be unselfish because it's going to help them be prepared to play in college. And then over time, they get really connected with each other. Like, our group over the last 6 to 8 weeks has become, you know, really connected, and they hang out together on the floor, in the dorms, you know, everywhere, and they really get along well.
Do you find, and again, you're 2 years into this experience versus being at, again, quote unquote, normal high school, do you find that they can bond faster just because they're completely immersed? Or do you find that because maybe the kids you coached at Lakewood Ranch had relationships going back to elementary school, just compare and contrast the two in terms of how quickly the kids bond or just what it looks like from your perspective?
So, you know, I think it's almost anecdotal because it's only been 2 years. It's like last year, the parents and the kids were like, "Coach, we had a great experience. We love the culture. This was awesome." And they wanted to give me a lot of the credit. And I said to the parents, like, until this is 5 or 6 years of us doing this consistently, you know, it might be more that your kids were great kids than it was that, you know, that we did anything as a staff, myself and Coach Santiago. You know, I do think that we try to create a culture with what we're asking them to do on the court helps them. Like, we don't let them say negative things to each other. You know, there's a positive environment that they're in. And I think it translates to what they do off the court. So far, I've found, because it's still a, like, there's still a lot of kids on campus, so they don't all hang out all the time. You know, they do hang out with football players or other people. With the traditional high school kids, I think it was potentially a little bit deeper because it was multiple years. We definitely had kids that knew each other from the time they were little. But then what was really unique is if a kid moved in, like we had a kid move in from Tennessee and a kid move in from a neighboring county and they never knew them. Well, the guys that were there, like, without me telling them, took them bowling and did things that connect with them because that was kind of the character of those kids and the culture that we supported. So it's really hard to compare it. I think it's just different. And some of it's like, some of it's just luck. Like, you get these great kids from great families and, you know, you try to support it, but, you know, I guess they always say, like, luck goes to those that work the hardest. So, you know, I think it's a combination of the culture we create, the things we reward, and, you know, just having really good kids. And I've had great kids at IMG the last 2 years and been really fortunate for that. Just high character kids that are serious about what they do and parents that support it.
Yeah, clearly that makes a difference. If you have kids that you bring into your program, and oftentimes that's one of the conversations that things that coaches who have coached both at the high school and the college level, they often talk about that when you're in the college level, you have some control through the recruiting process of who are the people that you bring into your program. And that can include the players, but it oftentimes includes the players' parents. And you look and you say, ooh, I'm not sure I want those parents to be a part of my program for the next 4 years. Whereas in high school, you don't necessarily have as much control over that. So clearly, if you can get good people in your program, that makes your job of building the culture much, much easier. Tell me a little bit about just some of the things that you've done. And again, it could be at any of your stops along the way, but just to get parents bought into what you're trying to do, to get them on your side, for lack of a better way of saying it, how do you engage them to make sure that you're building, not only, as you've said, the culture with your players, but you're developing those parent relationships and that support of the program so that maybe after those kids do graduate or they do leave, that the parents are still hanging out and have positive vibes about the program?
So the first thing is multiple parent meetings. So, like, I'll use Lakewood Ranch because it's a little bit more traditional, which I would imagine more people are at a place like Lakewood Ranch than IMG, since there's only one of those in the world. So, but, like, we would have meetings. So to go through it, we would have in the summer, we would have what we called, we had returners and non-returners. So a returner was someone who played the prior season. So that meant they've already heard me talk about what we're going to do, what our expectations are, all that stuff. So when we have a meeting with them, you know, it's like, hey, here's the stuff. Good to see you. Get out, kind of thing. Whereas we had non-returner meeting where we'd start to explain the culture and expectations, like in May, when school gets out, for all the kids that are new and haven't been a part of the program. So that way, when they saw what the summer schedule was and I could show them an outline of what the season was going to be, if they made it, you know, through all that, that parents could make the decision to see if that fit in with what their goals were. Meaning, in a nice way, not everybody was made to be a Lakewood Ranch basketball player. If the idea of, you know, 6 days a week of practice in season and going to big holiday tournaments like City of Palms or the New Orleans Sugar Bowl, where we're like traveling a lot, if all that sounds terrible, then, you know, we just may not be the right fit. And maybe you can find another experience or something else to do with your time, because these are going to be the things we do. If you don't want to lift 4 days a week, you don't want to maintain your grades, you don't want to be a good person on campus, because, like, we built a really strong reputation on campus and we're not going to allow anyone to impede that or impact that negatively. So, like, basically the first thing is just information. Like, these are going to be the expectations. These are the standards. Then we'd have a meeting in the preseason again, returners and non-returners. And then when we made the team, we'd have another meeting saying, hey, this is definitively what we're doing. You know, these are all the tournaments. This is everything. So we'd meet three times before a kid would be officially on the team. In that, we'd talk about fundraising responsibilities and all those other things. One of the things I thought was really valuable was we would communicate standards and expectations for the parents, the players, and coaches. So for parents, you know, without having it in front of me, things like, you know, we're only going to speak positively in public. If you have an issue or concern, come pull me aside and come talk to me. You know, our goal was to be different our goal was to have parents that said positive things in the stands, that didn't coach their kids, that allowed us to coach them. You know, just kind of outline what would be positive traits for parents. And that way, if someone stepped out of line, first line of defense was the other parent saying, hey, if you really have an issue, you know, you can reach out to Coach Schiller and set up a meeting. Have you done that? They said no. They would literally say, well, stop complaining because we don't want to hear it. So creating those expectations and standards. In doing that, it was never attacking because it was done before there was a problem. So it was done ahead of time. Same thing for standards of what they could expect from myself and my staff on how we treated the kids, treated them. And then obviously players would have standards instead of rules. I'm a big standards over rules guy of what they were going to do. So I think the first part was outlining exactly what expectations were and assuming that common sense is not common. So like, we're not going to yell at officials or whatever other things that we think as coaches, like, I mean, some people just don't know what they don't know. So we would outline that at the beginning. And then if we ever had issues, I would be cognizant of meeting with the parents one-on-one before it was more of an issue. But one of my coaching friends had one of the best lines I've ever heard. I've not used it yet, but I do use this as a thought process, is if a parent is enough of a headache, I don't know that I'm emotionally mature enough to separate the child from the parent. I want to be a good enough person where I say, hey, this parent's meeting with the athletic director and attacking me, not going to hold it against the kid. In my career, I can confidently say I never allowed that to happen, but it's obviously really challenging, right? If you're with a really challenging parent, you know, I really made myself make sure I still treated them for their choices and their actions and not the actions of the parent. But we also would express to the parent and the player, like, what was unacceptable. And the kids here too. So like, they know that their parent is not following the rules that were outlined. So it creates kind of a, everybody's in it together thing. And the kids liked it because it was things like, you know, like, don't coach your kid during the season. Like, I'm a very animated coach on the sideline. We're very obviously coaching your son. You know, this is your chance to just be a parent. And I remember a kid distinctly saying, you know, coach, you're going to stop my dad from yelling at me in the car. And I said, well, I'm going to try. I mean, I can't but do my best, because like, I would often describe to parents, like, listen, your son is taking this serious. They're in our program. They've played poorly. So first off, they know it because they're smart. Like, we were the number one GPA in the state. They're aware. They feel bad. They've let their teammates down. Their coach has potentially expressed it to them. Now they get in the car. All they want is a hug. Like, you don't need to get on them too. They know. And they're in a program where we're going to fix it and help them, give them techniques on how to be better. So last thing you got to do is yell and scream at them. So I think that really helped with parents. And the other thing that helped, especially, we didn't have a single transfer of a varsity rotation player in the 10 years I was at Lakewood Ranch, which in this generation is very rare, especially in Florida, kids transfer all the time. And a big part of that is we would do future planning meetings with the parents and the players. So I couldn't do it with every player, but if, you know, if, let's say an incoming class has a freshman has like six or eight kids, and you can kind of tell who your top three or four are, we would sit down with them and their parents and literally outline what we, you know, based on their work ethic and doing things the right way, kind of a vision for them. And that really helped, I think, parents get connected that would normally be impatient, because they would say, okay, you know, coach sees that he's on JV to learn to be a leader this year. And next year when he's on varsity, if he does X, Y, and Z, he'll put himself in a position to be on varsity and be able to be successful. So I think the best way to connect with parents is to actually connect with them. I think a lot of coaches put them off in the corner and don't talk to them and don't want to deal with them. And the problem is, you're going to, because they're going to be the ones that make the decisions about their kids. Time and time again, the kid's happy, the parents are not, and there's a disconnect between the coach and the kid's gone, and the kid's apologizing to the coach for leaving. So I always felt like if I could try to see that stuff ahead of time and communicate it, you know, I could maybe prevent that from happening.
Yeah, I think there's two things that you said, Jeremy, that stand out for me. The first one is that when you start looking at your behavior as a coach and the things that you do, and if you're going to demand those things of the kids, then you have to hold yourself to that same high standard. And when you don't, it becomes really obvious, and the kids see it, parents see it, and then that's where that trust erodes. So if you're talking about dedication and then you're not there for open gym, or you're not there for workouts, or
you're canceling things. Kids see that, parents see that. And then when you do ask them to, hey, we got to show more dedication or we got to work harder, even though the kid might not say it, right? Or the parent might not say it to you, in their head, we all know what they're thinking. And they're not wrong, because if you're going to ask something, you don't want to ask anything of somebody else that you don't demand of yourself. So I think that's the first thing that stood out to me that you said. And I think that's a great piece of advice or a great lesson for any coach out there that's just starting out or somebody who's been in the business for a while, to just keep that in mind. And then the second thing that I heard you say was about proactively communicating with parents and not putting them off. Because as you said, I think there's a lot of times where coaches, teachers, it's a lot easier to just kind of ignore the fact that parents are out there and just kind of go about your merry way and hope that things don't go haywire. But we know that if they do, your chances of having a positive outcome with a parent are much higher if you've already established a rapport and established communication. So I think, to me, that proactive communication is something that we've talked about with a lot of coaches, that it's so important to kind of just get ahead of the situation where you've already built up these positive vibes with a parent, so that if there ever does become a situation where there's an issue, it's a lot easier than to go in and handle that with a conversation when you've already built up the relationship, as opposed to the first time I'm talking to a parent is when there's some issue with playing time or discipline or whatever. I just think that that proactive communication to me is critical. And it sounds like that's what you've been able to do at all your stops.
Yeah. And I think, like, that's actually how I would say it to parents. Like, we'd have our first meeting and I'd say, hey, like, we're going over this. I want our first interaction to be positive. You understand what the expectations are. Cause a lot of times what you said is accurate. Your first discussion is a confrontation because you're upset or they're upset. Instead, when we go over the standards, like, everybody's happy. This is a new and exciting experience. We get to be on the basketball team, maybe, if I do these things, and, you know, try to keep it positive. And touching on a couple other things you know, like, kind of made me think of was the one I would use as an example is, like, I'm not a big fan of fundraising. It's just not something I enjoy doing. Well, it's a great time to show parents, like, hey, I don't enjoy doing this, but this is the process we have to do to make sure your kids get this experience, and I'm sacrificing this, right? Like, it's, I don't just say, oh, I hate fundraising, and then can't figure out why no one wants to fundraise. Being honest and accepting that that's not something I enjoy, but I do enjoy the end result, so I'm going to go get it done. And then there's two other things on communication that I think are really important. One is communicating trust with players and with parents. So instead of it being an attacking communication, it's a communication of trust. So the way I always describe it is, like, for our guys, and I changed this a couple of years ago, you know, oh, you don't want to win because you're not boxing out. And, like, we all agree at the beginning of the year when we do our goal setting that we want to win. So instead of saying if you want to win or attacking, it's because we know you want to win, we need to box out. So that way it's not that we don't think you don't want to win. It's that you need a reminder, and that's what I'm here for. So it'd be the same thing with, like, actions of kids. Like, I often try to frame it. Hey, your son's struggling on X, Y, and Z. I 100% believe he's going to fix it. However, we just want to make sure you guys are aware of what the accountability is if he doesn't. So it's not, I don't think he's going to. It's, hey, I believe he's going to, but just in case, you know, here's some of the options. And then the last one is one my girlfriend, who's also a very high level, she's been a very successful high school coach and a former Division I athlete, reminded me of this last year. But the ability to accept responsibility when we make mistakes, you know, as a coach, is super important for building that relationship with parents and players. Last year, I was more negative than I like to be. I try to communicate positively or generate accountability from other things besides just yelling. And last year she was at a game and I did that, and I agreed with her. And I went in the next day and, you know, talked to our guys and I said, hey guys, that wasn't what I want to be doing. I apologize for how I handled it. It wasn't anything it wasn't like there was cursing, it wasn't anything, but it was just not who I want to be and what I want to do. And it got me refocused. And all of the guys in our exit meeting mentioned that moment as, like, a really important moment for them, where they felt like, wow, I've never had a coach accept responsibility for acting inappropriately, even though it wasn't that inappropriate, but just accepting responsibility. And it helped them throughout the rest of the season accept responsibility, because I was showing them what they need to do. Hey, it's not the end of the world. I just yelled a lot when I shouldn't have been. I should have just pulled you off the court and talked to you. you know, it just managed it poorly and accepted responsibility. And I think that's a huge one for culture, because when parents see you do that, it's a connector. You know, they recognize that you're going to take responsibility when it's your responsibility to fix it.
And that's a new trend that I think has taken a turn for the better in the coaching profession. I can go back to my own playing experiences, and I just don't think that during the time, and again, I grew up, went to high school, graduated in 88 and played my college basketball from 88 to 92. And I just don't think that a coach apologizing was something that I don't think I ever experienced that. And at the same time, you could think of multiple situations as a player where you're like, man, I mean, did he really think that what he just did there, or looking back on it retrospectively, that was something that helped us? And you wonder, in moments of reflection, did your coaching staff, did they think about it and say, oh man, we made a mistake? And then they just, again, it just wasn't the way things were done. Whereas now it's so much better that coaches can take that responsibility. They can have that accountability and they can be vulnerable. And then I think, as you've said multiple times, that helps to build the trust with your players, because they see that, look, Coach Shiller is a human being, right? He makes mistakes. We're not all perfect and we're not always going to make the best decisions. And sometimes we're going to mess up. And when we do, we're going to accept it, because that's what we ask our players to do. So I think if you can do those things, as you said, it's going to build trust with your players. Parents see that stuff, whether they see it directly or whether they hear about it from their kids. It just makes sense in terms of building trust that you have to be vulnerable yourself and put yourself out there, because that's what we ask our players to do all the time.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the portfolio guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
When you get this opportunity at IMG, talk a little bit about sort of your mindset with leaving a place where you had a lot of success, and clearly you probably could have kept going there and continued to do what you had done and continued to win. So was the opportunity at IMG about doing something different, where you get an opportunity to basically be full-time basketball, you kind of get out of the classroom? That's a piece of it. Was it the idea of it being a challenge? Just what was your thought process in pursuing the position, and how did it come to your attention?
So it was really hard to leave Lakewood Ranch. You know, we built something we believed was sustainable. It was a really challenging dynamic. And as I've had different opportunities presented to me at high school or college level over the last 10 years, it was kind of always easy to say no. And a big factor is my parents and my brother and my niece are all within 20 minutes of where I live. So, you know, for me, I'm a big cost benefit analysis guy. So like, is whatever this job is that could be an exciting opportunity so much better than what I'm in now, and gonna, you know, potentially take me away from my family, which is really important to me. And when this opportunity came along, you know, I think you touched on the challenges of this unique environment where I you know, can I be successful, you know, at doing this with these level of players in a different environment, not being able to create the culture that we've created, not having as much control over, you know, the day to day, because you are a part of a bigger dynamic with other APD and other stuff. Like, I was the nutritionist, I was the strength. Well, I would hire a strength coach, but I organized all that. Now I'm in an environment where we have so many people. And I knew that going in. And I talked to a lot of people that had been at IMG when the opportunity came to kind of see what their thoughts were and if I fit in and all those things. And everyone just had such amazing things to say, and a lot of soul searching on it, but just felt like it was the right move for my career. Allowed me to get closer to a college level type and atmosphere, work for Brian Nash, who's our director, and Mike Gillian are both super invested administrators that work really, really hard. I felt like after spending some time with Brian, especially, like, we just aligned so much on how serious we take this. And sometimes in public schools, as administrations change, they're not as serious as you are about sport, or they have other things that are on their mind. And my administration at Lakewood Ranch for the most part was great, but those things change over time. So that impacted it. You know, just the unique, exciting environment of IMG just made it a no-brainer to go try this. And I tell people all the time, like, usually when you get a great opportunity and you advance in your career, you're packing your house and making new friends and leaving your family. And I went to Lakewood Ranch on a Friday, and on a Monday I drove to IMG, stayed in the same place. So that was definitely a positive part of the move.
As you were going through the process of making the decision, what was your biggest reservation, if you had any, when you were thinking about what maybe made you doubt, or what did you think, hey, I'm not sure how this piece of it's going to go? Does anything fit that description?
So it wasn't doubt. I tend to be confident in my ability to work. I don't always know how good I am at things, but I'm confident that, like, I'm going to work as hard as I possibly can to achieve whatever that is. So if I wasn't concerned about my ability to do a good job at IMG, I didn't know how long it would take for me to do a good job, but I knew that I could do that. The biggest thing for me is I pour very deeply into all of my players. So the idea of not seeing it through with the players that I had developed from the years before, not seeing it through with the kids who've been coming to my camp and now weren't going to be able to come play for me, and their parents, and they had expressed those things. I'm still in the community socially, but, like, not being in the community as a representative of Lakewood Ranch High School, which I took a lot of pride in, those were the things that were, like, the biggest struggle. Not so much the doubt of the job. Again, I'm not saying I thought I would do a great job. I just know that, like, I'm going to work until I do. So, you know, I wasn't doubtful in my ability to do it. I didn't know what it would look like, but I was more concerned with, you know, those relationships changing. You know, obviously still keep in touch with those players and some of those families, but that relationship change. And, you know, my intent was to be at Lakewood Ranch for 35 years and retire there. And, you know, instead I made it a decade and now have a really awesome opportunity at IMG.
What's been surprising about your initial couple years here at IMG? Is there something that you kind of went into it and you were surprised? I'm guessing mostly in a positive way based on the way you're talking, but what's just something maybe that stands out to you that you didn't expect that's been even better than what you thought?
So when you're outside of IMG, you always hear that, like, the kids and the families are really difficult because they obviously have major investments, you know, to be at IMG. You know, you hear all these, like, not stories from anyone that knows, stories from an assumption that the parents are a problem, the kids don't work hard, no one takes it serious, that it's really more of, like, an image than it is a reality. And when I got there, it couldn't be further from that. Parents have been amazing and supportive. The kids work unbelievably hard and are consistent with their effort. Been really blown away with the consistency of their character, both, like, their competitive character and what we do every day, and just great kids. So, like, outsiders, sometimes people hear these things and I don't think they have any evidence of it. They just kind of create their own assumptions. And coming into the environment, just how great the kids and the families have been to work with. And then not understanding, I mean, I live about 20 minutes from IMG or 30, and that's where Lakewood Ranch is in comparison physically to IMG, but, like, you just don't realize all the amazing things that happen on campus, you know, outside of the national teams that you see on TV, how great, how many talented players are. We've had, just for my team, we've had over 50 Division I college coaches come and watch us practice this year. And it's like, I didn't know that that happened for anyone but the national team. I just didn't know, you know, I didn't know that that dynamic happened. So I've just been really impressed with the level of investment by Brian Nash as a director in every single kid. You know, I think that was a thing that I didn't, you know, you meet a director and he's, you don't know, he's, you know, he's a former coach, but Coach Nash's ability to connect with all 18 teams, 180 players or whatever our total is, and all coaches, he connects with every single person. And for me professionally, it's also been great because, like, I feel as you get older, it's hard to find people you look up to. And Brian Nash is one of those people for me. Like, the way that he carries himself with 900 things up in the air that he's having to juggle, and when you communicate with him, you know, he makes every parent, player, and coach feel like they're the only one in the room. So I don't know that I'll ever learn to do that, but that's an added bonus and something I've been really impressed with.
To be able to work for a boss and an administrator who is working in the same direction that you are. We know, and I'm sure you know, plenty of people in the business who have worked with administration in a public school that you just don't get the same support or the support that you would want to have in order to be able to build the kind of program that you want to. So to be able to have somebody in place, and obviously IMG is a unique situation, but to have somebody like Brian in place who is going to give you what you need, who's going to support you, who is on the same page with what you're trying to accomplish, it makes your job all that much the more easier. When you're working with your players, and you just mentioned having a bunch of D1 coaches come in and watch you practice. So obviously part of what you're doing, part of your role is to help your players to navigate that recruiting process. What does that look like for you as the coach of a bunch of players who are going to be getting recruited? How do you look at your role? And maybe it's different with each family depending upon what they want or need, but just when you're thinking about trying to help a player reach their dream of playing at the next level, what's your role as their high school coach?
So I think the first step is to help them generate a roadmap of specifically what they need to work on that college coaches are going to want to see. So that's come from years of experience, both being at that level and communicating with coaches at that level, to make sure that we're not working on one-legged step back threes for a 5'10" point guard, that we're working on making sure that they have the ability to guard the ball 94 feet, to make the correct paint decision, to make open threes and handle pressure. So it's like, you know, we have a very talented post player who's 7'6" and he's really good. Well, my job is to help say, okay, what are the question mark coaches are going to have? Can he guard a ball screen? Can he make decisions on the perimeter as far as like dribble handoffs? Can he make decisions on the pick and roll? You know, when he's in the paint, can he make post moves or does he just finish? So we sit down and we create a roadmap for them for exactly what they need to work on so they can be focused on those things and not get distracted by all the other stuff. So like that's number one job. The next job is to make sure that I contact every college coach I can. Last year, I sent out two different times 6,000 emails, which is an email to country that's counting assistant coaches, director of basketball operations and everything, with a profile of all of my players with a highlight link, a little blurb about them, their GPA, or if they were hunting for higher academic. And I sent that out to every coach in the country. So my job then is to make sure that I get that information out. And then the other factor is we use our extensive network to make sure that we're reaching out to the right coaches and programs to help get the right eyes on our kids. It's so hard to describe, you know, if every coach there has just this extensive Rolodex of Division I, Division II, Division III NAIA coaches. So as we go through this, we literally all work together to get those coaches to see the kids. The college coaches only work directly with the head coach who's with them. So like if someone like we'll use Michigan State last year with Carson. So Jimmy Carr, our now post-grad national coach, had the connection to Michigan State. But when Coach Wojcik comes down to recruit Carson, he comes and talks with me. He talks with Jimmy too, but he comes and talks with me. I'm the one that sets up the film. You know, I'm kind of the main person. But we use those connections to make sure kids get to the levels that they're supposed to. And then the other thing that we do, you know, that's part of our job is when I have a college coach on campus seeing my kids, I let them know when the other teams are practicing that they may have kids that are at that level and vice versa. So like our head, our Sean McAloon, our national head coach, if there's a high major guy there, or mid major guy there seeing his guys, he'll literally say, hey, in 30 minutes, you got to go over and see IMG Blue. There's, you know, X, Y, and Z kids there. And, you know, having a 7'6", 16 year old usually helps. People usually want to come over. But we have two other high major recruit level kids too. So that's helped a lot of our kids. So, you know, we are the director of the process with the parents and with the player. As they go through each year and we get information on what levels are interested in them, then it transitions into helping them make decisions related to the climate and what college basketball is. You know, this year we had a kid with a Division I offer, very strong from a school that he really liked. And he had a bunch of Division I interest. But nobody had pulled the trigger as aggressively as the first school, which he liked, had the major he wanted. And so in this climate, where 10 years ago you'd say, well, just wait late, you're going to get a lot better during the year, there'll be a bunch of offers. Now with that transfer portal, we have to help make sure that we're giving the parents appropriate guidance. So, you know, part of that guidance was, hey, you've got a school you like with coaches you like that have a plan for you. If we wait till late, there may not be that there, no matter how good you get, because from about now until April, it goes very quiet for everyone that's outside of an elite prospect, meaning top 50 in the country. So we have to help educate the parents and the players on kind of how all of that works, and then support them in the decisions that they make, because it really is their decisions for the rest of their life. For me, it's always about them. It's not about me. I don't care. I'm proud of the kids that go on to Division I, Division II, or do whatever, but it's really not about me. It's about them being set up for the rest of their lives and, you know, at a program that fits their skill set.
Finding that right fit is something that we hear from tons and tons of coaches, both at the high school level and at the college level. And I think one of the things, Jeremy, that we've tried to do here on the podcast is just educate anybody who's out there listening as a part of our audience about how good every single level of college basketball is. And I don't care if you're playing Division III or NAI or JUCO, wherever. Obviously, everybody has that dream of being able to play Division I basketball. But so often you see kids get hung up on that, where they just say, hey, if I can't do that, then I'm not going to play at all. Or you see kids who go to a program that maybe doesn't want them really that badly, or a program that isn't a good fit, or whatever it might be, just because they're chasing something that they really don't need to chase. I think what's important is you got to find the right fit. You got to find the right coaching staff. You have to find the right school that has the educational programs that you're looking for, where you're going to fit in. I think, can't remember who I attribute this quote to, but somebody told me you want to go to a school where if you weren't playing basketball, you'd still want to go to school there. And to me, that's a pretty solid piece of advice, that the basketball is obviously going to be a big part of it. If you're a kid, especially a kid coming from IMG, if you're serious enough to go down there and make the investment and be a part of that, then clearly you have an investment and your parents have an investment in your career as a basketball player. But I think that if you can look at it and approach it of like, hey, I got to find the right basketball program, but I also have to find the right school. I think when you can marry those two, that's when you're really off to being able to have a tremendous amount of success as a college player and a college student athlete.
Yeah, I think a big part of it is coaches making it about the player and not themselves. So I think one of the things that does happen is coaches are like, oh, I sent 9 guys to Division I. Well, like, were those kids happy? Did they have a good experience? I think the other thing is helping kids understand their why. Like, why is it D1 over everything else? Well, that doesn't really sound like you love basketball, because, like, to me, it's definitely fit over level. You know, I think we're seeing more where lower levels, quote unquote, lower levels, different levels like Division II are beating Division I schools. And I think it's helping kids understand and navigate that. One of the things I use to help kids is I say, you know, if they think they're high major, I have them pick the high major school, tell them to find a kid that's their height, see how much they weigh. And then if they fit the description of the height and the weight, look at their high school highlights and see if they make those plays. Now, if they're young enough, that should be a motivator. If they're older, it should be a realistic vision of, okay, maybe I'm not a player.
Yep. Yeah, that's great.
Is if you don't think D2 or D3 is good, pull a roster, look up a player, and look at it and go, wow, that kid averaged 30 a game. He was all state in my county, and he sits on the bench for a Division III team. you know, because they just don't know what they don't know. It's our job to educate them.
It's so true. I mean, I think it's funny because the number of Division III coaches that we've talked to that have said they're sitting down with recruits and their parents and saying, hey, have you ever watched a Division III college basketball game? And oftentimes the answer to that is no. And I think kids and parents, they just don't have any idea how good you have to be. Like I said earlier, to play at any level in college, you really have to have a love for the game. You really have to be a very, 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 very good player. And I think if you took most high school players and put them on the floor in a Division III open gym with guys who have played, it's probably not going to go well. And I think a lot of high school players and their parents would be really surprised to hear that when you start talking about schools. They're like, I never heard of this school, or this school is so small, or this or that. And the ultimate reality is that those players are way better than you think. And as you said, you got to find the right fit rather than the right level. And look, I get it. I get a kid wanting to stretch. And if you got one Division I offer and everything else is Division II or Division III, I don't know that I would blame the kid for trying to give it a shot and see if they could play at the highest level, because you could always go back, and especially now with the transfer rules and just different things. But at the same time, it's really important to find that right fit. And I think that the advice that I hear you giving players, and especially there at a place like IMG where so many kids have those aspirations of playing at the next level, to me, that's critical that the high school coach is educated and then is consequently able to educate the parents and players to be a part of it. Before we wrap up, Jeremy, I want to ask you one final two-part question. And first part is, when you look ahead, obviously you're in the early years of your time there at IMG. What's the biggest challenge that you see in the next year or two? And then the second part of it is, what's your biggest joy when you think about what you get to do every day? So your biggest challenge followed by your biggest joy.
So I think the biggest challenge is we were extremely successful last year on the court at IMG with IMG Blue, where we're trying to change the culture to be, you know, an extremely high level team that's recognized at a national level. And then this year, I think we have a chance to potentially be even better. And we're playing in really high level events like City of Palms and the Governor's Challenge. And we'll play at least two nationally ranked opponents. So I think the biggest challenge is we have some really talented players that we'll have had for two years. And we may not have them for a third year, as they may move on to national, because they're good enough to do that. And it'll be interesting to see. The biggest challenge is, can we consistently maintain this level? And I believe with myself and staff and the support of Coach Nash that we'll be able to maintain it. But I'd say that's our biggest challenge is, as we navigate this season and going into next season, can we continue to maintain, you know, just great culture and making sure we're helping these kids, you know, get to high levels of college basketball. And then my greatest joy every day going to work is twofold. You know, one is just the overall ability to work in my passion, which is coaching, and not have the distractions of anything else. It's just really almost impossible to find that type of environment. And then the other part of my joy from a work standpoint is just the kids I get to work with and coaches every day. Like my team is just a great group of guys. There's 11 of them, and I have two assistant coaches that work with me on a regular basis, Daniel Santiago and Jesse Edwards. And then one of our head skills coaches, Jimmy Barron, who played at Rhode Island, is the A-10 leader in 3-point makes, also helps us out on a regular basis. And just being around such quality people, just – like, I can't get to work fast enough in the morning. It's just, I'm really fortunate, and it definitely brings me joy every day.
Well said. And I think it sums up basically our entire conversation of just who you are and what you're all about. Before you wrap up, I want to give you a chance to share how people can find out more about you, about what's going on at IMG. So if you want to share social media, website, email, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah, so I'd love people to reach out if there's things I said that they like, didn't like, or just want to connect. My Twitter is Coach J Schiller. My email is Jeremy, J-E-R-E-M-Y dot Schiller, S-C-H-I-L-L-E-R, at IMG.com. And I don't mind, my cell phone is 941-840-3538. Can be reached at any of those pretty much at any time, and always really enjoy connecting with other coaches.
Jeremy, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule. Really thankful that Jerry Buckley connected us. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.